Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. The state reported 18 new cases of COVID-19 yesterday, and once again, they were in South Central and on the Kenai Peninsula. The new cases include 4 in Anchorage and 1 each in Homer, Soldotna, Big Lake, and Anchor Point. The Alaska resident case count is now 513, with 376 of those recovered. There was one new hospitalization reported, bringing that total since March to 48. The state also reported 18 new non-resident COVID-19 cases in the state. All but one are seafood industry workers, including 10 in Whittier and 3 in Unalaska, 2 in the Kenai Peninsula Borough, and 1 each in Anchorage and Kodiak. The other non-resident cases in Sitka and designated as other industry. University of Alaska Regents have put the brakes on a plan to merge University of Alaska Southeast programs in Juneau, Ketchikan, and Sitka into either the University of Alaska Anchorage or Fairbanks operations. The cost-saving proposal has drawn major criticism since being introduced by UA President Jim Johnson last week. UA spokesperson Robbie Graham says during a meeting yesterday, Regents voted to delay action in favor of a motion by Regent Dale Anderson of Juneau to instead conduct an in-depth analysis of merging UAS and University of Alaska Fairbanks programs while, quote, maintaining the unique identity and environment of each institution.
It includes everything from looking at the true cost savings from merger to the regional impacts, how it might impact the economy of Southeast Alaska, certainly how it would impact the students and the programs. They'll be looking at the proposals that have come in from others, I think most notably the one that came in the other day from the Sea Alaska Heritage Corporation on Tribal College.
Graham says the review, which will take place over the next 4 to 6 months, will involve input from a wide range of on- and off-campus stakeholders. Regents also approved a budget for the upcoming new fiscal year. A spending plan, which includes staff layoffs and executive furloughs, suspends pay increases and eliminates 50 academic programs. Graham says the $832 million budget is $25 million less than the current year. The same amount state funding is being reduced under a compact between Regents and Governor Mike Dunleavy. The budget also includes $24 million in COVID-19 related costs, a hit Graham says is being covered with a draw from savings.
By policy, the Regents keep that account between 2% and 6% of the overall university budget.
Graham says Regents spent 2 hours of yesterday's meeting and executive session to talk about the possible departure of President Johnson, who is the sole finalist to become president of the University of Wisconsin.
And when they came out, they talked a bit about how they would address the succession plan. And most notably, they'll come together twice in June on the 10th and on the 16th to talk about an interim if that step is needed.
Regents meet again today, and Graham says one of the agenda items is the 50 academic programs slated for elimination. She says Regents will be going over motions made by the Academic and Student Affairs Committee and could rescind some of the deletions. A long-serving City of Fairbanks firefighter has died. According to a city release, 47-year-old Battalion Chief Kenneth Mayfield was found deceased in his home yesterday morning after coworkers requested a welfare check when he did not show up for work. The city says Mayfield's death appears to have been accidental, adding that no weapons were involved, but the city has not elaborated on the circumstances. Mayfield had been a city firefighter for 22 years. Acting Fire Chief Todd Chambers says the department has lost a good man, a valued colleague, and a brother above all. Well testing is planned for private properties in the Harding Lake and Salcha areas near where a large volume of liquid firefighting foam residue was dumped this spring. The chemical residue was from testing of firefighting systems at Eielson Air Force Base, and a local contractor, Rolling Stone Incorporated, had an approved plan to properly dispose of it, but instead an estimated 33,000 gallons of a 2% foam solution were dumped on the ground at two company-owned gravel pits off the Richardson Highway. U.S. Army Corps of Engineers spokesperson John Budnick says the possibility of groundwater contamination has prompted a testing plan.
Test private drinking water wells within a quarter mile of the improper disposal locations, as well as two public wells will be tested next week near the community.
Budnick says one of the public wells is at the Noddy Shop, and the other is the Salcha Community Well. He says a survey will determine how many of the 35 private properties have wells to be tested. Budnick says it's unclear when the well test results will be available.
Sampling can take time in the information gathering portion of this, as well as the actual collecting of the samples, but we are looking for a week turnaround once we've done the test.
In the meantime, it remains unclear if there's any health or environmental threat. Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation on-scene coordinator Sarah Moore says the foam does not contain PFAS and no drinking water advisory has been issued. Moore says totes containing additional volumes of the high-expanding foam waste at the gravel pits have raised questions.
We know that the totes that still contain product appear to be reused totes. They have some labels suggesting that other material was in them before this high expansion foam waste. And so one of the questions we're looking to answer from the samples taken from the totes is what else may be in them in addition to what we expect to see from the high expansion foam.
The DEC, the Army Corps, and the Air Force are investigating the dumping case to determine who's responsible and why the approved foam disposal plan was deviated from. The COVID-19 pandemic has brought back century-old memories in rural Alaska of one of the most traumatic experiences in the state's history, the 1918 Spanish flu. Governor Mike Dunleavy is married to an Alaska Native woman from the northwestern corner of the state where the pandemic hit hard 100 years ago. As Alaska Public Media's Nat Hurst reports, her family's experience has influenced some of the governor's decisions.
Alaska Governor Mike Dunleavy's wife, Rose, is from Norvik, an Inupiat village on the Kobuk River. During the 1918 pandemic, rural areas were hit especially hard, and some estimates say the flu killed as much as 8% of the Alaska Native population. Dunleavy says his mother-in-law had her own story about the disease.
She was a young girl. Her father and she were sick at the same time, literally in beds next to each other, and he died from that flu.
To be clear, Dunleavy's grandfather-in-law died in the 1920s, after the worst 2 years of the Spanish flu. While the pandemic flu persisted for decades, it quickly became less lethal, and it's impossible to know whether it was the one that infected Dunleavy's wife's family. Nonetheless, Dunleavy says he went back to that memory as the state faced its first set of decisions around COVID-19. There were other stories he heard from his own father, too, of people dying of diphtheria and scarlet fever, and his own experience working as a teacher in another village outside Nome.
Living out there and understanding the differences between the ability to deal with a healthcare issue out there as opposed to here.
Alaska healthcare providers credited Dunleavy with taking quick, early actions to contain the spread of COVID-19 before it overwhelmed the state's hospitals. But infection rates are now creeping up after the governor relaxed health mandates, saying there's enough healthcare infrastructure to handle more cases. In Norvik, where his wife's family is from, Elder Elsie Sampson says some residents are getting impatient for new information about the disease and frustrated with how long it's persisted. But she says the village, which has no confirmed cases of COVID-19, has been working with state medical professionals, and she says Dunleavy's experience in their region helps him understand what its residents are facing. In Anchorage, I'm Nat Hers.
And I'm Dan Bross.